You are listening to a podcast from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.
Pigeon. He was a grumpy old git, small in height with a huge nose and a lined face red with broken veins. He reminded me of Albert Steptoe with his baggy trousers and braces, an owl mustard cardigan full of holes, but always clean, freshly washed and clean shaven. Smelling like methylated spirits from the DIY jobs he carried out in the shed full of rusty nails and bits of wood. He loved his garden, the size of nothing, glowing like a jewel among the 1960s Belfast council houses. I raked the leaves for him while he stood smoking his pipe, St. Bruno tobacco in a wee round tin. Later, he got a tin of Campbell's chicken soup out of the cupboard. I wasn't allowed to touch it in case the sharp edges cut my eight-year-old hands. But he let me stir it, calling me pigeon, while he buttered bread and put it on a plate. He made me blow in every mouthful of that soup so that my lips didn't get burnt. In the garden, a blackbird lands beside me. "That's your Granny Alice," he says. "She's here with us." After that, my day's raking leaves were full of fear, no longer enjoyable as I forever looked over my shoulder for ghosts. He gave me my green fingers and love of nature. My balcony is filled with all the flowers he used to grow. On sunny London days, I picture him among the scent of carnations as I chase the pigeons and my soup gets cold. Belfast, 1966. There were no security barriers then when we came out of St Mary's after Sunday evening mass. No soldiers to search us as we went into the cafe in Chapel Lane. You with your white gloves and handbag, stiletto heels clicking on the floor, buying me beef-flavoured crisps and red lemonade. No warning of what was to come. Before the barbed wire went up, and strangers with funny accents carrying guns come onto our streets. It was always sunny then, with the smell of flowers and the sense of water flowing, of peacefulness, of smiling faces. Going into town with the aunt that I loved, a skinny six-year-old with my wee white hat and pink coat, black hair coaxed into ringlets, black paint and shoes gleaming, unprepared for what was to come. Spaceships and other memories. Come in, my aunt was shouting. Come in and see this. There's men walking in the moon. Running into the living room, I looked over at the TV. Greeny black and white images flickered on the screen. Granda was in his usual seat, smoking his pipe, tattered mustard cardigan over his braces. "That's all a take on," he was saying. "They're not really in the moon. That's a load of rubbish, and them stupid shitehawks expect us to believe it." 1969, the year stuck forever in my mind. A year when men colonised the moon and, closer to home, men with guns and English accents recolonised my city. In school, we were told to write an essay about whether money should be spent in spaceflight or in alleviating hunger and poverty in the world. What about the black babies, as the Catholic Church called starving African children? I remember the name Biafra a lot. In the school playground, a priest, just back from the African missions, plays the guitar and sings Kumbaya. A lot for my nine-year-old mind to take in. I gazed at him mesmerised, that image frozen in time. Kumbaya still reducing me to sobs whenever I hear it. Other memories of that closing year of the 1960s, of sitting in the parochial hall at lunchtime with my friend Caroline and her mother, who worked in the school, singing Lily the Pink along with the scaffold playing on the radio. Caroline's mother always turned it off when the news came on. Riding in the bogside and the burning of Catholics out of their homes in the Falls Road and other areas were not for young ears. Little did she know that I knew all about intimidation and being put out of my home. On the bus with my Aunt Bridie, a young woman in a maxi skirt and long black hair gets on. She's beautiful and I want to be like her. That beauty, if still alive, will be faded now and aged. But, caught in the capsule of time, I still see it and wonder, where is she? Did she survive the bombing of her father's bar, famous in 1960s Belfast, destroyed like so many childhoods? The soldiers at the security checkpoints were as alien to us as those spacemen in the moon, with their boots and their guns and their tanks like rockets. Tin cans floating in space, floating in my memories, forever frozen in time. 1969, a year when everything, in the words of W.B. Yeats, changed utterly and a terrible beauty was born. These are some more memories. This is for my mother. You used to burn everything. I'd come round the side of the house and black clouds of smoke would be coming out of the back door. You fried everything in lard in that oil grill, blackened with time. Eggs, bacon, sausages, soda bread, potato farls, all burnt to charcoal. You said that you like things to be well cooked so that we wouldn't get food poisoning. How the neighbours didn't call the fire brigade, I'll never know. At Christmas, you started cooking the turkey at 5 o'clock on Christmas Eve, leaving it on all night so that by the time we were ready for our dinner, it was so dry we could hardly swallow it. You certainly kept the Bisto and Oxo companies afloat, as the only way to make your food edible was by smothering it in gravy. When you died and I was at home for 4 weeks, it took me a while to figure out what I was missing, apart from you, of course. I realised that as I came round the side of the house that there was no black smoke billowing out and that I could actually breathe in the kitchen. Right then, I would have given anything to be served up a burnt black plate of food one more time. And this one's for my aunts and it's called 1967. The early evening sun shines down on you both as you sit in the doorstep, hair wrapped up in chiffon scarves, brown legs stretched out in front of you, the smell of Grandad's flowers all around us. His tobacco smoke sweet in the air as he contentedly digs the garden. A garden full of carnations, roses, polyanthus, and the two conifers at the front door that I love running my hands through, releasing the scent. In the kitchen, the sheets are getting washed in the oil boiler, and later I'll help to put them through the mangle, a job I looked forward to all week. Then you'll get me to practice my writing by doing a list for the messages. 1 pound of butter, 4 ounces of tea, 4 slices of bacon, 1/2 stone of potatoes, 1 pound of onions, 1 turnip and 1 cabbage, all delivered from the wee shop in a cardboard box the next day. As the sun sets, you both go in and watch Peyton Place, your favourite programme, and I help Grandad to rake up the leaves from under the hedge. The comfort and familiarity of those childhood rituals in a working class neighbourhood in 1960s Belfast. Homecoming. At the top of Dundrum Castle, looking out over the Irish Sea, stars glittering above us, you told me you would come home. Being searched by British soldiers on the way back from Mackaylee, our feet sore from dancing, you told me you would come home. Gyrating madly in a Belfast disco among the other dykes and queens, both of us cruising unashamedly, you told me you would come home. Sitting in a London flat, listening to my Irish music, the pain etched in your face, you told me you would go home. On a cold September evening in the foothills of the Mourns, a breeze coming in from the sea, your brother told me you were home. And as the priest muttered a prayer, and the cold earth enveloped you, and my tears flowed like rain, you had finally come home. Searching. I search for you in a grey Belfast street while soldiers cock their guns. I look for you in a Regent's Park winter among the English accents. I call your name off the Giant's Causeway, crying for you the whole length of the Antrim coast. I search for you in the warmth of a Spanish night while the smell of jasmine scents the air. I think I find you in the heat of a Greek island, but you remain elusive and slip away. Searching on the west coast of Clare, I came nearest to finding you. The Atlantic waves crashing, echoing my pain, my cries blown by the wind. I'm still searching. Why writing groups are so important. We met at the Irish Women's Centre, spending our days busily writing in the wee back room, encouraged to unleash our creative selves. We quickly became close, walking on the heath, drinking endless cups of tea in each other's flats while we listened to Van Morrison and Bruce Springsteen. Your generosity of spirit and sheer love of life pulling me out of my depressions. The shock and disbelief when they told you it was terminal. I was going to lose. My love and support weren't enough. I was fighting a losing battle. I remember your eyes lighting up at the bright yellow of the daffodils that I brought you in the hospice. That last night, sitting with you till morning, knowing as I stumbled out of the hospice at 9 a.m. that I would never see you again. I've planted a rose bush on my balcony for you. The flowers will be orange, one of your favourite colours. I'm working on my dream, just like Bruce Springsteen. Your washing machine is doing well, but Helen, I would happily hand wash my clothes for the rest of my life if it meant I could see you again. Sleep well, Granmore. And this is to round everything off, coming full circle. Letter from Belfast. Dear Shuan, well, here I am. I'm still standing. This old body's been through a lot in its time. I'm still sore from when they blew up the Europa. How many times was it again? And that barbed wire from the Andytown barracks cut deep. Yes, love, I've seen it all. When your daddy and mommy and Auntie Bridie went to the Club Orchid well before you were born, there were no soldiers in the streets. Even still, it was brewing. It was bubbling away under the surface, so it was. Do you remember when Auntie Bridie used to take you to see Our Lady in the Grotto at St Mary's? You hated Mass, but sat through it because you knew that after it was over, Bridie was taking you to the wee cafe next door for lemonade and crisps. You'd sit in the garden staring at Our Lady. You went back to see her nearly 50 years later, didn't you? Still there, still standing. If she could talk, would she say, I'm the woman who, like you, survived a war, survived the bombs and the bullets, and I still stand here and watch over my Belfast children. Shuan, she'll say, when I am old, you can still come and see me in my grotto. I'll still be here. Just like I'll be, Shuan. A city that's seen the best and the worst, standing proudly looking over Belfast Lock, saying goodbye, but also welcoming back my lost children. Hopefully I'll see you again someday. Your Isle Mucker, Belfast.
You are listening to a podcast from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.